talking about all the automotive ads that you'll be watching on Super Bowl Sunday.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 181 for February 1st, 2013. The good, the bad, and the ego. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Mr. De Lorenzo.
Buongiorno, Jamie.
It's good to be here with you again.
Good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
And we have David with us today.
David Kiley from AOL Autos.
Thank you very much for asking me.
And in a little bit later, we're going to have Michael Sprague from Kia on as well, talking all about Super Bowl and advertising and all that. But you guys were talking a little bit just before the show of Dan Akerson appointing an admiral to the board of General Motors.
You know, it got under my skin a little bit because I thought it was sort of this perfect political pick for a GM board member. They have a relationship. They're friends. He's a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So, you know, how many people are really going to quibble with that choice? He had to get, I believe he would have had to get approval for the board position from the government still. And, of course, they're not going to say no to a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs. But in reality,
it's stacking the board.
It's just stacking the board again with your friends. And this is how this is one of the things that got GM in trouble in the first place, which was a stacked board that let Jack Smith and then Rick Wagner, you know, manage the company into this inbred, insulated, dysfunctional place that hit a brick wall. So, you know,
I agree with you. I said one of the lessons I think we should have learned from the big bankruptcy, the big collapse, as I call it, was no combination CEO chairman. Those
right.
duties
yeah.
should be split. And you cannot let the CEO choose who's going to go on the board, just to the point
yeah,
that you're making
yeah.
there.
And it's also a signal that Akerson, he already hinted, but this is a signal to me that he isn't going anywhere. Originally, he was going to be gone the end of 2013. I don't think he's going to go anywhere.
Ooh. Wow.
I don't. If he stays beyond the end of 13, I don't think it's going to be much longer. But I fully expect him to stay long enough to realize a financial windfall from
from
the stock price.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's resentful of the government overlords, and he wants out because he wants his pound of flesh.
Well, he wants it. He likes it both ways, like most hedge fund guys do. You know, he is on record as being grateful and in favor of the government bailout, but now he wants them the heck out so they can all make their millions.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's looking at what kind of paycheck Alan Mulally's taking home and going, hey, wait a minute,
and
what
know,
about me?
They do complain about it. They say, oh, we've lost five or six blue chip C-suite people because we couldn't pay them enough. You know, we've all followed General Motors long enough to have seen some of the most incompetent, overpaid people in the history of corporate America pass through these hallowed halls. You can't tell me that there isn't a really good person to hold the title of CMO, to hold the title of CFO. Are they? I just refuse to believe that there aren't good people to fill those spots, you know, that don't automatically cost you $2, $3, $4, $5, $6 million a year.
Well, I think the reality is that Akerson is now an impediment to bringing people in. I think the word is out, and I don't think people want to go there. And you know, he doesn't present a very good front, does he? I mean, he goes and puts Bob Ferguson, the chief lobbyist, as the global brand ambassador for Cadillac.
That was a weird. I mean,
I mean,
it was a weird choice. I would not say that I know that Bob's going to do a bad job in that. There are people that I've talked to who think that he could wind up doing a very good job. It's a weird choice. I mean, it's
well, yeah, but it's part of it's Ackerson's management MO, which is disruptive management. Yes. He also has no respect for the business at all. None. He thinks the automobile business is a joke.
Just echo that. To make the point that Peter is you don't put people in charge of super critically important positions who have no background in that whatsoever. Would Ackerson ever put somebody in charge of advertising, in charge of finance, who's never had any financial background? Never.
No, never works.
And that's why I'm tying into what you're saying. To me, that's a disdain for the core part of the business.
Yeah.
His thinking that anybody can go in there and do it.
Well, he's gone on record saying anyone can run product. No, that's not true, Dan. Sorry. But he has a general disdain for the business that was established in Whitaker's book.
Yeah. We were just talking about that, Ed Whitaker's new book, which I haven't read the book, but the excerpt in Fortune. And he seems to want to take credit for kicking Bob Lutz sort of to the curb after he came in, wondering, why is Bob in all these meetings? I don't understand. You know, and people saying because he often is the guy in the room. The short answer given to him was he's often the guy in the room with the best idea or the best judgment because everything leads to product, right? But that was a concept that I'll spare Whitaker the totality of my opinion on his book because I haven't read it yet, just the article. But one takeaway I had was that here's a guy that, you know, loves his own press releases. But Ed Whitaker was one of 500-600 guys, at least people, I should say, who could have walked into this GM in that situation and done what he did and maybe even done it better because it was so dysfunctional that you and I could have done 80% of it. I mean, so.
I pretty much agree with you. And, you know, I've got a bone to pick with all the car companies because their boards are stacked with finance guys. You know, I would have loved to have seen General Motors put somebody with some sort of retail experience on their board. They have none. Nor does Ford, nor does Chrysler, nor do any of the other car companies. But I don't get this preponderance to just keep going back to finance guys, pretty much largely finance people or executives with a heavy finance background. I'd love to see somebody who really knows advertising and marketing, as well as somebody who really knows retail. I'd love to see somebody who really knows design.
Never see that on the GM board until I don't know. There's some upheaval and they start over.
But you're right. There are creative business people that would be valuable board members if they were willing to put the time in. I'll give you a quick example of a guy I'm thinking of. And he probably is on a couple of small boards. But a guy, Tony Fidel, who is CEO of Nest, the company that, you know, it's a smart thermostat thing. He was the godfather of the iPod at Apple. So here's a guy with, like, this sort of engineering, this creative, the product, understanding. He understands innovation. That's the kind of guy every board should have on it so that there's a guy with that background sort of questioning decisions from the standpoint of being competitive, being innovative, being creative, all those kinds of things. But you don't see it in the big companies.
Not at all.
Yeah.
The other news this week is I think the pendulum's swinging the other way for old Sergio. You're actually starting to see negative stories in the media, which were non-existent up until just recently, that the Fiat thing is going to drag him down. He doesn't have his product together. Yet he turns around and promises, oh, we're going to have 47. What did he say?
Yeah, 47 models in the next 4 years.
I mean,
that's counting everything under the sun.
Yeah, but why say that when clearly the last time he said it, it didn't work out that way? And the bottom line is like Chrysler's, that's the story's been, where do they make their money? Trucks and Jeeps.
Well, I was going to say that because the earnings or reports are only give you so much, but I'm guessing based on the sales numbers, if you can see that there must be just an immense percentage of the, if not all the percent profit right now out of Ram and Grand Cherokee, because they've been producing Grand Cherokee, which is incredibly high margin, full out in Detroit. And Ram, I don't know if it's full out, but might be close.
Yeah, no, that's their profit center. I mean, you can crank out all the little pea shooter Fiats you want. They're not going to make any.
No, no. And, you know, you can't make big bucks on A and B segment cars.
And the real issue, though, is how far will Fiat's troubles in Italy and the European economic situation drag him down to the point where he is in deep trouble?
Well, I'll be the counterweight that I think that Sergio Marchionne, I have a lot of faith, and I'm like Mr. Skeptical on CEOs. I think most CEOs are way overrated. I think he's incredibly smart. I think that he has a plan. I think that he's incredibly, like, the plan may change, you know, but you're right. They're overexposed because they're Fiat. They're overexposed in Europe, which is a train wreck. Although you kind of feel, I feel like what I'm reading anyway, because I'm not an expert, feels like it's bottoming out.
That's what they're saying.
So if he can get through the...
David, I don't see it, though.
No?
I hear people talking about, oh, yeah, this is the year that Europe's going to bottom out and it's going to start growing. Based on what?
Well, I will tell you, I'm trying to remember, did I read it in the Times? It's a pretty good story, actually. And I didn't realize some of this. It's fascinating. In France, for example, how much it costs you just to get a driver's license, because the article pointed, I had no idea about this, that you are forced to spend like a couple of $1,000 preparing for the driver's test. And if you don't pass it, which many people don't, you have to spend that money over again. And so they were talking about the young people just, you know, don't want a car. It's too much of a financial burden, especially when employment, you know, my employment situation is. So that's one of the things dragging sales down and
that's
and worrying.
That's always the case, yeah. You know, because I can remember back in the 90s.
But I didn't know that. That
I cost, don't know where the cost is now, but I can tell you, for somebody to get a new driver's license in Germany in the 90s was $1,000.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you were talking about that kind of money.
That's really not that new. You know, owning a car in Europe is more special than it is here. Because of the cost. It's harder to do.
And it's also there, you can get along much more easily without
You don't need a car if you're in any city.
If you're living in Europe, you can get darn near anywhere on a train.
Right.
So.
But that's always been the case. And yet, you know, in a good year, Europe will sell more vehicles than the U.S. will.
Yeah. No,
people want cars, even though they're hard to get.
He is in a lot of trouble because the Fiat and Peugeot and Renault are finding their cars are not as popular as the German cars or as the Asian cars.
Opel's in trouble there. Ford's in big trouble, but at least they're moving far faster than everyone else to deal with it.
I think Ford, I like Ford's long-term prospects in Europe much more than Opel. I mean, I don't know anybody who thinks Opel is going to make money in our lifetime. Really, I don't. I mean, and that it is a brand that is just being managed down. And there's this kind of wacky, I've been talking to people about whether or not this is really a strategy that could work. This idea, whether they wouldn't admit this, managing Opel down to its natural eventual phase out while they try to manage Chevy up. And Chevy, I don't know anybody who tells me that Chevy is a brand that will catch in Europe. I don't know anybody who tells
me. It's been growing very quickly, but it's largely
off a small base, though. Very small base.
Yeah, I want to say they did 500,000 cars last year, mm-hmm. something like that. It's not that small, but it's not as big as Opel. It would take forever for them to grow it to that size. I don't buy the thing that GM is deliberately managing Opel down. Man, they've lost what? $17 billion in the last decade there. I mean, it'd just be easier to lock it up and walk away from it.
Well, that's what Fritz was going to do, and they talked him out of it fired him. So.
That's right. Hey, let's get to talking about Super Bowl ads, mm-hmm. and we're going to have Michael Sprague from Kia join us. But before we do that, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our great sponsor, Bridgestone. Okay, and now we're bringing Michael Sprague in from Kia. And Michael, great having you on Out of Line After Hours with us again.
I appreciate the invite. Good to see you guys.
So let's talk Super Bowl. You guys got, what, two ads coming up. And why is my question. I know David and Peter here, they really love advertising. But my question is, why do you guys go just gaga? You car companies. I think there's going to be something like 15 car commercials all around the Super Bowl on Sunday. Why is it so big for you?
Yeah, for us as a brand, it's a great platform. I mean, remember, we've only been in the marketplace for 18 years. And there's a lot of people that still don't know who we are versus some of the competition that have been here 20, 30, 40, 100 plus years. So we see it as a great opportunity to raise awareness for the brand, but also to launch new products. We started back in 2010 with the Sorento, which went on to be our number one selling vehicle. 2011, we featured the Optima in the Super Bowl. It became our number one selling vehicle this year, selling over 150,000. So we see it as a great opportunity to raise awareness for the brand and launch new products.
So, Michael, what are you featuring this year? What are the cars?
So we've got, in the third quarter, we've got a 30-second spot to introduce our all-new 2014 Forte. And if you recall, we started to launch that back in 2009 in the summer, and Cash for Clunkers came in and basically wiped out the launch of the Forte. So it's kind of a relaunch of the Forte brand. And then in the fourth quarter, we've got a 60-second spot because we've got a newly refreshed 2014 Sorento, which we built down in West Point, Georgia. So two, we think, really great spots to launch these great new vehicles.
I've seen, Michael, I've seen the Sorento spot. It's very charming, and I think I would be surprised if it didn't score very well on the ad meters. You talked about your awareness issue. I'm going to ask the big advertising term word. What is Kia's unaided awareness right now, which is kind of how much do people know your brand and know what it is if you don't give them, you know, things to remind them about it?
Yeah. So for example, our awareness has grown about 20% over the last 4 years since we started to introduce the Soul. So grown 20%. We compare ourselves versus the Asian manufacturers, primarily the Toyotas, the Hondas, the Nissans. We're at about 55-60% in terms of overall awareness. We think we've got a lot of opportunity to improve there.
Whereas brands like Toyota and Honda have like 95-98%, something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure the Fords, the Chevys definitely have the high 90s. Off the top of my head, I don't recall specifically the Toyotas, the Hondas, but definitely, as I mentioned, we got a lot of ground to make up.
When I see those numbers that are like, you know, 95% unaided awareness of what Ford or Toyota, I'm like, who are those other five? who are those other 5%?
Immigrants.
And what hole have they been living in?
So, Michael, tell me about your background. How did you arrive at Kia, and where were you before this?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up right outside of Flint, Michigan, and I actually went and worked for a consulting company for a number of years, went back to business school, joined Ford back in 1996, worked for them in the U.S. and also over in Japan. I worked for Mazda as well. And then in 2008, got recruited to join Kia as the VP of Marketing and Communications, and have been there now 4.5 years.
Great.
So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been a brand that's just been on a tear from a growth standpoint. When I was at Ford, I was primarily at Lincoln Mercury, where, you know, we've seen what's happened to those brands. So it's great to be on a brand that's on an upswing.
So, Michael, where do you come down on the hot issue of showing your Super Bowl spot for the first time in a game with the element of surprise in play, or promoting the hell out of it through super media or super social media, and showing it and talking about it and before and after the game and all of that? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, we're a pretty strong proponent again for getting our name out there and try to break through some of the clutter that we know. I mean, there's going to be 65, 66 spots on Super Bowl Sunday. So if I can get, you know, a million people talking about my spot, or at least having seen my spot before the game, that's a million people that are talking to their friends as they're watching the game about the spot. Last year, we introduced our spot in cinema on the Friday before Super Bowl. We'll do the same this year. So our 60-second Sorrento spot will be on 23,000 screens come Friday, and it'll run the whole month. Again, we're a small brand trying to, you know, cut through the clutter. We're a strong proponent. We just posted our Sorrento spot yesterday, and we're all already at about 775,000 views on YouTube. So,
here it is.
Yeah.
Hold on. This is the one you're calling Space Babies?
Correct.
Right.
And so Ben's running the video of that right now. And he's leaving the sound off simply because, you know, so many people listen to this as an audio podcast. But it's visually arresting. You've got all these little babies and baby animals and what look like some sort of a spaceship or space, I don't know, center. And that's got to be one of the things that you went for, is something that's very visually arresting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got an audience of 110 million people who are basically watching the ads to be entertained. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to tell a story here and also showcase the vehicle in all its glory. And the idea behind this spot was that the Sorrento campaign is built around this idea that the Sorrento has the answer for everything. So if you're looking for 5 or 7 passenger seating, we've got it. If you're looking for cargo space, we've got it. If you're looking for technology, we've got it. Safety. So what the spot does is answer that question that's perplexed parents for many generations, and that's when their child asks, "Mom, Dad, where do babies come from?" And so the father takes the child through this story, and at the end, the kid says, "But wait a minute, my friend Johnny says, Mom, babies are made when mommies and daddies." We hit the father quickly hits the Yuvo in-vehicle communication system, introduces the Wheels on the Bus song, changes the topic really quick, and we move on.
So, Michael, as long as we have you here, can we draw you in a little bit on the conversation about Volkswagen's ad? And it's been criticized by some as being racist. This is an ad that features a guy from Minnesota, I think, specifically, who's in his office, and he's talking like a Jamaican man, you know, and he's like trying to
impart. In fact, we got that ad. Let's run the ad right now. Can you bring up that Volkswagen ad?
I hate Mondays.
Yeah, they're the worst.
No worries, man. Everything will be all right.
Yeah, man.
Come on. Don't fret me, brother. Sticky bun comes soon. Yeah. Wicked coffee, Mr. Jim. Julia, turn the frown the other way around.
Hey, Dave, you're from Minnesota, right?
Yes, I. The land of 10,000 lakes. The Gopher State.
So in conclusion, things are pretty dismal.
You know what this room needs? A smile. Who wanna come with I?
Traveling along, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
You guys are 3 minutes late.
Don't be no cloud on a sunny day.
Yeah, chill, Winston.
Sir?
Respect, boss man.
We'll make you happy.
That's the power of German engineering.
Well, first of all, Barbara Lippert, who has outlived her sell by about 30 years, shows up in the Today Show and says it's racist, which is just absolute crap. I mean, if you don't have a sense of humor when you're going into the Super Bowl or watching the ads, then you ought to sit in a dark room and play with yourself during the game, because it's just absurd.
I feel like true confessions, Barbara Lippert is a former colleague of mine at Adweek in my Adweek days. But I do think she went over the deep end. But, Michael, I want to ask you, because what I'm interested in is, I don't know if you have ever been in this position, but, you know, you watch an ad being made, you approve probably storyboards, and then you're looking at rough cuts, and you're watching it over and over again, and you think you've got it, and then you put it out there, and some percentage of people find something to be offended about. And then you have to decide, are you going to reconsider running it? Are you going to dig in? Clearly, Volkswagen went to the mattresses on this, as we say in The Godfather, and got these Caribbean cultural boards to come out on their behalf. They got the Jamaican Tourism Board to support them. How much of a predicament is that, and how would you react?
I usually don't comment on my colleagues or my competitors' creative because I don't want them commenting on mine.
No, I got that, but you're in that position. We kind of wanted what's it like being in the chair? Because Tim Mahoney's in the chair this week. You could be in the chair another time. What do you weigh when you're in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know Tim and the VW team, they did a lot of research that didn't come up from what they're saying in their consumer research. I mean, I look at the data and say, you know, this is a pretty effective ad. People are talking about it. It's meant to be done in a fun and entertaining way like we talked about earlier. I think it's a pretty good ad. I think they should be pretty proud of it.
I do, too. I think it's a strong ad. And the thing that struck me was, I watched it before I heard any of the racism thing, right? And if you've ever taken a vacation in Jamaica or the British Virgin Islands or something like that,
talking like that.
Well, you do a little bit, and it's and that patois is actually it's the culture. It's not the race of people that live there. It's all about the culture. And for a couple of days when you come back from the islands, you're still kind of, you're missing it. You're missing that island culture where it's like, no problem, man. It's like the whole, the national saying, it should be on the flag, is no problem, man. You know, and you that's what that was about. It had nothing to do with race, yeah. Nothing.
No, I think it's a fun ad. I think it's an effective ad. If I were Volkswagen, I would just hope that everybody spells the name correctly. You know, it can't hurt that it's become a controversial ad ahead of time.
Our story had about 125 or 30,000 unique visitors that read the story, and we had a poll. We asked people to vote on whether it was racist or not, and we had something like 94% said no. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, when we post our ads on YouTube, we go and we follow the comments, and we're never going to please 100% of the consumers. There are always going to be people, I think, that find something wrong with an ad, and that's the world we live in. You know, I don't necessarily want to please everybody. You know, because you know, people are talking about it, and that's great for them. But I think at the end of the day, again, they did their homework. There's no issues there.
You know, it's funny. You could Deutsch, which is the ad agency for this, a few years ago, if you remember, they had Saturn, right? And they were doing the it was a Saturn ad, I think. It was the suicidal robot.
Oh, yeah,
the
right.
Car robot, yeah. In the factory, right?
Yep, remember that. Very controversial.
And I was doing a story about this ad for Business Week. And so I was at Deutsch's offices the week that they were working up to the final cut. And I'm in the room with the creative director, and I actually had commented on the cut that I had seen that I thought it was too busy. And that was my, like, there was too much story going on, the version I saw. And actually, he wound up cutting some things because he agreed with me that there was too much. But none of us foresaw the issue with the suicide, that there would be people out there, you know, with great hue and cry over the fact that the idea was that this robot was on a bridge about to jump off. Like, who? You can't anticipate what people, right. It's going to offend people all the time.
Michael, I'm curious, how many ads do you consider when preparing for the Super Bowl? I mean, walk me, because these guys that are with me, David and Peter, they're well-versed in it, but I'm a guy who never spent one second in advertising. Just sort of walk me through, how do you brainstorm this? How do you come up with ideas? How do you pare it down? How does that work?
Well, so for example, last year we ran our Optima in the Super Bowl. Within a week, we had the network CBS contacting our media agency saying, hey, we want to start selling Super Bowl now for 2013. Is Kia going to be in? So immediately we kind of have to start strategizing and thinking, okay, you know, we've got a big launch in 2013. We were launching seven new products or redesigned products. So we've got to start figuring out from a timing standpoint if it makes sense. So we lay that strategy out April, May. We brief the creatives in June, give them about 6 weeks. In August, we start looking at creative concepts. In the case of the Sorento, the agency nailed it. And I think because we knew the target customer so well. So if I recall correctly, there were probably four or five concepts that they came in with. On Forte, we had a little more, I'd say, more discussion, more exchange of ideas. And we finally got that one nailed down in, I think it was late September. Then we started production in November and have been in post-production since then. So it's a very, for us, it's a very long process. It always surprises me when I read, you know, some other brands just shot their ads in January. And I'm just like, wow, I couldn't do that.
And the other thing, too, is you were talking about how you make these ads so entertaining, so fun to watch. And not that you don't have fun with your other ads, but you approach the Super Bowl differently, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We make sure that, you know, again, there's 110 million people that are there to looking for that, you know, high energy, you know, visually impactful, you know, fun, you know. And for us, it's not about, you know, it's not like a Doritos or a Pepsi where we're looking for that kind of that quick belly laugh humor. We're just looking, you know, to bring a smile to people's faces because that's what we think we deliver as a brand. So, yeah, it's a pretty intense process. But we do try with our soul. I mean, I think we've been pretty effective in doing the same thing in terms of having a high impact, visually enticing advertising. Again, because we know that's what the target customer's looking for.
Yeah. Let's go do another ad. In fact, Ben, let's go to that Lincoln teaser too. And I want to show you guys this one. What I find fascinating, it's an ad about making ads. And they crowdsourced this whole process. And, Ben, let's run that.
Well, this is, okay.
When the Lincoln Motor Company teamed up with Jimmy Fallon and asked you to tweet about your most memorable road trips, you helped us tell a story where a German farming student bums a ride, where alpacas run amok.
It's the alpacalypse!
And a wrong turn leads to another planet.
Really?
A journey that reminds us.
The road is full of love.
It's a story that starts with you, because luxury always should.
Now, they're running another 30 on the game, which is a much more product-focused spot. So, but they had a 60-second buy, and I wouldn't have split it. I would have used it.
I don't like 30s in the Super Bowl. Yeah. I think you should use a 60 to tell a story. And unless you've just got this. The 30s are for, like, the GoDaddies, you know.
Michael, let me ask you. Your Space Babies, I want to say, is like a minute 10, a minute 15. Very odd time.
Yeah, for the Super Bowl, we've got a 60-second version, and then we had extra footage and extra vignettes that we wanted to include. So online, we're showing a 75.
Now, Lincoln has a 90 of that online.
Yeah, we do have a 30 for our Forte, and I think it's a quicker read. The car is really the star. I think it'll connect with the target customer, young men, very tech focused.
And what do all three of you make of like 2 minute ads?
Well, it depends. Now here's the thing. The two schools of thought: you social media the hell out of what you're doing, run up during the game, after the game, lots of hugging and group hugs and, you know, social chatter. Or you do the element of surprise. Now, Olivier, I'm a genius, just ask me, Francois, Sergio's marketing butt boy. This is the only thing I agree with him about, and that is, one, you don't show your stuff before the game, and two, the M&M spot was 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, that's a dramatic, it worked great. The Clint thing was an embarrassment. Mm. But I will give Olivier this. I mean, they're going to be on the game. Have you heard one word about the spot?
No.
And that's the way I would do it. You're not going to, if I'm doing it, you're not going to see it. You're not going to read about it. You will see it on the game and then let the social regurgitation begin. Yeah. I think that's the way to do it.
I told them the same thing. I think what Michael is doing with their ads, see, I think your ads, Michael, are of a different category. And I actually think maybe at this point, Chrysler and Budweiser are the only ones that at this point I would say definitely save it for save your like for Budweiser, which is going to probably take 4, 5, 6 ads, something like that. Save like your one or two, at least your one or two ones that you think are special, because you're not going to have 6 special ones to debut in the game. And I told Francois the same thing. I said, you know, if you take 2 ads and one of them is kind of product oriented, you need to put that one out there. Maybe the like the Fiat or an Abarth ad that he's fooled around with. That's fine to put out there. But I told him, I said, if you're going to do another anthem ad, a halftime ad, that because I disagree with you. I did not think I thought the Clint Eastwood ad was not as good as Eminem, but I thought it.
You don't think Italians and French people telling Americans how to be Americans is? You think that's good? That was total bullshit.
I disagree. I thought
we disagreed.
We always disagreed.
Well, you camp out at Francois's desk, I'm sure, half the week. But
no, I don't. I see him at auto shows. That's pretty much it. And we always talk about advertising at auto shows. That's the only time I ever see
Olivia
him.
Talks about himself. And then occasionally talks about advertising. I thought the Clint Eastwood spot was an embarrassment for Clint, for America, this company trying to tell us how we're supposed to be. Total horseshit. I'm sorry. It's just bullshit.
It was Chrysler was the brand behind the ad, and they were writers from Oregon who wrote it.
We agree to disagree.
All right. I mean, but I do think that he staked out a unique position now in just a couple of years.
Well, if he blows it this third time, it's not
there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on him to do an ad that gets talked about as much as the ones of the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, that is. But, Michael, what do you think about long-format ads?
Yeah, I agree with David. I think Chrysler has staked out that turf of we're not going to release this. And so if I tried to do the same thing, you know, people are focusing on Chrysler at this point and what are they going to do? In terms of the long form ads, you know, the M&M ad was stunning. I thought it was really cool. And it worked. I mean, they were the first. You know, they got a ton of buzz out of it. And that's really what we're all trying to do is try to find that one thing that we could generate a ton of buzz around. And for them, that first year, well, for them, it was two things. It was M&M and it was a 2-minute long form. But it's got to be great. We're all watching.
No, that's exactly right. And probably Chrysler's getting watched more than others. I thought the M&M one was brilliant. In fact, I just saw it again recently, and I was stunned at how here it is 2 years later. It's still powerful.
Holds up.
I don't think the Clint Eastwood one was that bad, but it clearly wasn't as good as the M&M one. And I think Peter's right. I think there's enormous amount of pressure. And of course, I think anybody who performs in the public view and performs at a high level puts enormous pressure on themselves to try to figure out how do you keep this going, and it can't be easy. Michael, your ad for the Optima last year was awesome. I loved how the Optima plopped down in some sort of Maya ceremony with pyramids in the background and everything like that. And That was an interesting ad. Where do you learn how to cut things off? I mean, like you said, you're running a 60 in the Super Bowl this year. You've got a 75 on online. Clearly, some of it's just paying for airtime is going to dictate how long something should be. But going back to that Optima ad, you had scene after scene after scene after scene. And I'm sure there's big arguments over what stays in and what doesn't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's the ad you referenced, John, was actually 2011. 2012 was Adriana Lima, Motley Crue.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The guy's dream, mm-hmm. and then he breaks into his wife's dream and, right. and captures and takes her back. But for us, we were number three on the USA Today ad meter last year. So the expectations are pretty high on ourselves of, geez, we got to do better than that. And there's not a lot of room there. So a lot of pressure. But yet we have intense discussions, intense debates with our creative agency about, you know, I want to see more car. I mean, I get the stopwatch out. It drives them crazy. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm only seeing, you know, 13 seconds here of the 60. And they're, you know, they're all about the story and, you know.
Once a Ford man, always a Ford man. time in the car in the ad.
Exactly.
So Michael, I've noticed year to year to year now that your ads have a big production quality about them. Whereas there are other ads that, you know, they kind of go on location and they try to tell a story. Tell me a little bit about your thinking, the agency's thinking, about creating this sort of visual, consistent footprint for your ads over a few years.
Yeah, it's it goes back to how we're positioning ourselves as a challenger brand, where we're challenging traditional convention in terms of how to go to market. And the Super Bowl is the platform that we really use to showcase that, because you're right. So many car spots are just car on road. And we do that too. We do that tier two, and in some cases, sometimes to showcase more product and features. At tier one, we'll do the traditional car on road. But for the Super Bowl, that's not what consumers want. They want a story. They want to be entertained. They want to be able to talk about it the next day. And that's why you'll see in the 60, there's not a lot of car, but the follow-up spots that we have coming after the Super Bowl, you'll see more of the car.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is probably a good time to segue to the rapid fire part of the show, where we get questions from the audience. So, Ben, let's run that graphic.
Very politically incorrect. We might have to think about changing that to a smaller magazine.
David's saying that the guy with the machine gun should have a smaller magazine.
That's right.
But, okay, George from Brooklyn says, and Michael, I'll throw this to you, does Kia do focus group work on their ads?
Actually, no.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Way to go, Michael. Please. Hallelujah.
I think focus grouping ads has gone out of style.
For us, I mean, for my perspective is, I'm paying my creative agency a lot of money to come up with the idea and, you know, be forward looking and be on top of the trends and in terms of pop culture and things like that. And having groupthink just doesn't work for us. So no, we don't do research.
Cool. Totally agree. If you want to do something truly creative, that doesn't.
Right.
That doesn't work with...
Don't take a poll.
Yeah, don't take a poll. Exactly right. Rum and Coke says, VW ads seem much more low-key. I wonder what works better. I think what he's getting at is, you know, the space babies, a lot of computer-generated stuff, right, a lot of visual this, and here's the Volkswagen one with a guy talking with a Jamaican accent. Maybe that's what he's getting at.
Well, it just depends on their brand, and I think Volkswagen is really nailed where they need to be in the market with product.
Mm-hmm.
And just with tone. Actually, the Jamaican spot's cool. It's not as great as the spot they did.
With the little Darth Vader. Yeah.
Well, that was good, but I'm talking about the smile spot that they ran this summer. It was just people laughing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was really powerful, more powerful than those two, even though I liked the other two.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. George from Brooklyn wants to know, any plans to move Kia upmarket? Would you make it a Korean Lexus?
Yeah, so we introduced in Detroit the Cadenza, which
that's right.
We see opportunity. We've got a large number on the Optima Limited. It's like we're having some problem.
Yeah. So anyway, you're not going to make it a Lexus. Well, here, we'll keep moving. Veriman 64 says, love the show. This is for Peter. On Wednesday's Autoline Daily, you made some great suggestions as to where GM should go with the Corvette last week. He says, in looking at the rear of the entry-level car you proposed, I see a little bit of Corvair styling from the 60s. Makes me think of what the Corvair could have been.
Yeah, actually, the influence there was the Monza SS. The Monza SS and the GT were two of GM's greatest concept that never get their due, but that was the influence there.
Mm-hmm. And I'll throw this to you, Peter. Glenn E. says, will Fiat's issues bring Chrysler down once they gain control?
Well, Fiat can't afford to buy the rest of Chrysler because of the issues in Italy, and it'll be a real bone of contention for Sergio, because he can't do much if that situation continues downward. He'll have to start cutting other places, cutting other product programs to fuel. You know, he'll be doing one of these, well, I got to throw some money on this, which means that product program will suffer. So, I mean, Fiat has to get healthier in Europe, there's no question.
It's easy to see why the Viva Trust would like to cash out now.
Oh, yeah.
They see a lot of uncertainty down the road given. Now, while Fiat's European business is in trouble, they are, I believe, that they're pretty strong in other markets, in Central America, South America. They have good business there, and but obviously Europe. I mean, if they really start tanking further in Europe, that's a problem. I will say the good thing for them, I think, is that they are at the more affordable end of the market. That's bodes somewhat well.
Mm-hmm. For Ben, you got that phone call?
Hi, John. Joe from Yonkers. How are you? My car just had to get it taken back by the manufacturer. How about doing a show with the extremists on lemon law recalls and, about vehicles that need, by manufacturer. So it would be a good idea if you could do that. Thanks. Bye.
I wanted to ask him what kind of car. I was curious.
Yeah.
That's bad when they have to take it back.
when the automaker takes it back. You know, that's not maybe a bad suggestion. I get frequent requests for help from people who have got a problem with their car, new car.
Yeah.
And the dealer or the company just will not help them. Now, clearly, I don't know the full background on everything that's going on. I don't know if they've caused problems themselves, but it happens enough that it may not be a bad suggestion to look into that.
Is Michael still there?
Yeah, Michael, do we still have you?
Yeah, yep.
Okay. Good.
So, yeah, where it froze up, you were talking about taking Kia upscale.
Yeah, so we introduced the Cadenza in Detroit. We see an opportunity in that large car segment. We've got a lot of consumers coming in buying the Optima, the high end, the limited, which starts at around $35,000. So we see, as consumers are continuing to look for more value in their purchase, that we can make some headway there. So, but you won't see another brand. We'll continue to build within the Kia brand.
Are you married to that name, Cadenza, Michael?
Yeah, it's a global name,
okay.
David. So we get the benefit there.
There was a lot of jokes at the auto show that the next concept would be called the sideboard or the dining room table.
Okay, Swivel Buckets wants to know, do you think Ford's Focus electric lease offer of $306 a month with $200 down will make a big splash or a ripple in the EV car market? Anybody want to jump
in? Well, I think the problem is, well, the manufacturers knew this. They were going to build these vehicles, you know, pretty much at gunpoint, and there wasn't a market for them. So now they're trying everything.
Yeah.
It might work, but...
No, it's not going to work.
I was going to say it might work to a very limited, small degree.
It might double their sales.
Right.
They might sell another handful.
I'm very I hate this conversation because I'm very frustrated because I'm not in love with a straight EV, although I think it's a very good solution for some people. I like the plug-in, you know, extended range option a lot. I'm a big fan of the technology, but boy, it's such a slog. Getting the infrastructure, getting the pricing right, and getting...
I don't know. I was convinced from the get-go EVs were not going to sell simply because hybrids, after so many years, are still 3% of the market, and there's no infrastructure needed whatsoever.
Right.
And on top of that, I was really geeked about the plug-ins, the Prius plug-in, the Ford C-Max Energy and the like, until I drove them. And it's like, Jesus, these things come nowhere near what the EPA label says I'm going to get. And it's substantially more money. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what the real-world fuel economy is, there's other alternatives for a lot less money that come awfully close to it. So I don't think that no matter how much they chop the price of these EVs, I just don't see them selling. Selling better than they are, yeah. But these companies have spent $1 billion on each one of these models, and they're never going to make a return on it.
It's very frustrating. Again, I like the Chevy Volt. I like to drive it. I love having it when I get it as a loaner. But it's very frustrating to see the different elements not coming together at the same time. So the price of the batteries is still too high. The infrastructure's not here. The product, I like driving these cars, but without those other two elements in place, it's this.
But here's the kicker for me.
Yeah.
They don't sell in Europe. $8 a gallon for a gallon of gas or diesel. They don't sell there. Japan, $5-6 a gallon. Japan's the perfect market for electrics. They just don't. China, which is trying to leapfrog everybody in the world and has got the most generous incentives out there.
Right.
Their sales are a fraction of what ours are with a much bigger market now.
Yeah.
So I just don't see these things catching on. You know, maybe
catching on fire, maybe.
that could happen. You know, and I'm like you. Yeah, I'm all for getting better fuel efficiency. But Peter said it right. The government put a gun to the industry's head and said, you're going to build these things because we've decided what technology path you should follow. We're going to tell you what you should be building.
And wasn't this week when the California Air Resources Board...
Lisa Jackson out.
They stuck their shovel, you know, their stick way into the ground saying, oh, we don't care. We're going to stick by our rules, even though they're nonsensical. And
what would have been a so much smarter play for the country was if they had gone all in on natural gas, converting big rig trucks to natural gas, establishing the
I don't agree.
And I'll tell you why.
Because, look, I'm a huge natural gas proponent, but not for vehicles.
Why?
Because they're more expensive than hybrids or electrics.
Yeah,
this is what people don't understand.
When you scale it, the cost comes down. The costs come down. You can't go buy the Honda Civic natural gas because it's a one-off.
Right. But look at any of them, and here's the challenge. Making an engine run on natural gas is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, the three of us, you know, with pliers and screwdriver could make it work. The trick is storing the natural gas, which is under extremely high pressure, so that it meets all the crash standards. And the fuel lines that run from the tank to the engine, they've got to be built like the Rock of Gibraltar. You cannot have them crack or bend at all. Mm-hmm. And no one's figured out yet how to make these things pass all the crash standards without adding thousands of dollars to the cost. And I've done reports on this. If you want to own your own island, figure out a cheap way of storing natural gas in a car. Boy, you can write your own ticket. Whoever cracks that code, or if you can figure out how to store it where it does not have to be in high pressure.
Well,
But we've been working on that for 100 years.
It's interesting, though, because that's kind of a transition problem solving to the hydrogen fuel cell. And just this week, was it Ford?
Nissan and Daimler all teamed up together. And earlier, Toyota and BMW. Yeah, and right. Hyundai, Kia, they're doing their own. Honda's doing
their own. And I mean, so, you know, talk about pressure. That fuel cell tank is... That's the huge number. That's the huge cost that they haven't been able to solve yet, because it's just this incredible piece of technology. And so maybe they're figuring it out.
They're working on it.
But, you know, there's other things that could come along. I'm intrigued by this hydraulic hybrid approach. And, you know, just this week, Peugeot and Bosch announced a system for a hydraulic hybrid that's using compressed nitrogen. That's a fraction of the cost of using batteries. So, you know, to me, it's what the government should be doing, and governments around the world is saying, look, here's the target we want you to get to. You all go figure it out. We're not going to jig the rules to pick the technology we, the government, think that you should have.
Yeah, but that's not the mindset in Northern California politicians who are in Washington. They want to tell us what's good for us.
That's right.
That never ends well.
And it's not. You know, look in Michigan how much money the state sunk into supplying battery companies with taxpayer dollars.
Right.
And, you know, the biggest of them all, A123, went bankrupt. Now the Chinese own it. And now they're going to try to bail out Fisker because they sell the batteries to Fisker, which is another company that's gone bankrupt after getting how many millions of dollars from the government.
Yeah, so, no, the Fisker solution is just put Corvette V8s in them.
Which is what Bob Lutz is doing.
Right. Yeah.
Well, look, this is probably as good a time as any to wrap this up. But Michael Sprague, you know, Vice President of Advertising Marketing at Kia. So great having you on the show with us. This has been great having your input on it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we'll be watching for your ads on Sunday.
That's right.
In the game, not just looking at them online.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Michael. Okay.
Thanks, Michael.
And David Kiley, great having you here, man.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Thank you for having me.
Peter, as always, man, always good to have you. And, of course, we want to thank all of you who have tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.